something a little odd to me about the fact that the Oilers are finally making a smart move, and now's the time they're getting criticized? Come on. Welcome to the Unforced Errors Podcast. Matt Robinson here with you. First one of these in a little while, but I don't know. Hockey Twitter kind of blew up today. Big story as the Oilers, as I said, maybe broke the internet a little bit here. Not going to be just an Oilers show, as one of the things that's intriguing here, and we're going to talk about the Oilers and what they've done here in terms of how they may have put themselves into a little bit of trouble, but how this also, I know, you know, a sizable group of our listenership here, based on, you know, kind of the things that we talk about, are Leaf fans, and this is going to be a big deal for the Leafs. This means a lot to the Leafs, and it's something that they are for sure keeping an eye on, so we're going to talk about that as well. First up, I didn't plan to talk about this, but it broke literally just as I was turning the mic on. I wanted to give you my first blush impressions on a move the Senators have made here. They have signed their backup goalie, Mike Condon, to a 3-year deal, which on the face of it makes very little sense, but we'll get into that. I like Mike Condon. I was hoping he would become a UFA. He was a guy that I thought the Leafs should have their eye on to replace Curtis McElhinney as the Leafs' backup. McElhinney did an okay job for the Leafs, but he's not a guy I would want to rely on long-term. And you want a guy who's going to push your starter, which Condon is capable of doing in the short term. You know, if Anderson goes down, well, that's an interesting sentence. If Frederick Anderson were to have gone down in Toronto, Craig Anderson did leave the team in Ottawa for an extended period last year, and Mike Condon did an admirable job of carrying the ball there. So that's the kind of guy you want. I thought the Leafs should have their eye on him, but he has re-signed with the Senators, as I said, though, for 3 years. Annual cap hit of $2.4 million. It's too much for too long. I'm going to give that guy $2.4 million for a year or two, or he's going to come for $1.8 million for 3 years. He can't have both. It's too much for too long for a backup goalie. And the Senators should know that better than anyone. You remember remember Andrew Hammond? Played like 20 in a row, had that unbelievable record, got them into the playoffs, has done nothing since. But right after that, they gave him a 3-year deal with having proven nothing. And they can't get rid of him. They've been trying it ever since. So, bad move, in my opinion. And an extra bad move when you look at how this deal breaks down. Year one, $1.7 million. Year two, $2.5 million. Year three, $3 million. This is a terrible way to structure a deal like that for this type of player. Like I said, I wouldn't have given him the 3rd year. He hasn't earned that. Before he showed up in Ottawa, he was over in Pittsburgh looking at headed to the AHL. In his last 30 appearances or so, over the last 3 months of the season with Ottawa, he had a .908 save percentage, which is below average. So 3 years is too long. And that last year, when you're probably realizing it, when you're probably looking to unload him if things haven't gone well, you've left the most expensive year to the end. So, you know, a cheaper team, a low-budget team, which kind of the Senators are, that might be willing to take that guy, isn't going to take him for more cash than his actual cap hit. It needed to go the other way. $3 million in year one, 2.5 in year two, and 1.7 in the 3rd year. So if it's not working out late, you can trade that to a team. Say, look, you've only got to actually pay him 1.7 mil, and it'll represent 2.5 on the cap, 2.4 on the cap. That's appealing to some of these Floridas and Carolinas and Arizonas. Plus, just in general, anyone's happy to have to pay less money, right? So I don't like the way this was structured. I don't think it was a very good idea, and I think the Sens are going to come to regret it. Let's move on to Edmonton. As a week or two ago on Tall Can Sports, Rob and I discussed what's going to happen there, what might it mean for other guys, And is it going to be guys like Draisaitl and Nylander in Toronto who set the bar before McDavid and Matthews get to, just based on when their contracts come up? It looks like, at least in Edmonton, that's not going to be the case. Reports surfaced this morning from Ryan Rashog, who covers the Oilers for TSN, and Elliot Friedman, who continues to get pretty great scoops here across the nation of Sportsnet. Both report that they are closing in on a deal, the Oilers and McDavid, for 8 years, $13.25 million per. It's not done. As far as I understand, they can't sign it until July 1st anyway. But you can certainly have the terms, you know, finished and ready to go. One of the things apparently left to be discussed is what happens around the impending, you know, I believe it's 2020 lockout. And it sucks that we're already looking at it as such. But the league has continued to piss off the PA, and the PA, like I said, is not happy. Most people expect there will be another lockout coming. Normally, you don't get paid during those. And so there's something like already $50 million locked up in bonuses league-wide for that year. So come September, October, you won't get your paycheck, but on July 1st, you can have a signing bonus that maybe is worth roughly, you know, your actual contract worth for that season is only $1 million, but your signing bonus is $6 million. So that's just kind of a loophole that people are working around. So there's some talk that that's still being negotiated between the two parties here in terms of how they want to handle that. It's just ridiculous that in this league, contract negotiations feature what to do when the lockouts come. Not if the lockouts come, but when they come. Thanks, Gary. So 13.25 has ruffled some feathers, and I get it. And there's a couple things to look at here. It's a lot. It will make him by far the highest paid player in the league. Right now, the highest paid guys are Kane and Taves in terms of highest cap hits. That's around $10.5 million per. And Anze Kopitar in LA is at $10 million. Boy, does that one look pretty bad right now. I think we can all pretty easily make the argument that McDavid is better than those guys. Maybe the only guy in the conversation with McDavid right now for best player in the world is Sidney Crosby, and he's locked up somewhere around $9 million. That's the thing. Now, he negotiated that a while ago. The cap was a little lower, but he consciously took less to make sure that the Penguins had room to sign other guys around him, like Fleury at the time, like Letang. They were able to bring in Kessel. They had Malkin, also, who took a little less to leave some freedom. Now, you could make the case, if you wanted to, that McDavid is doing that too. You are allowed to pay one player upwards a high limit of 20% of the salary cap. If this number of 13.25 is correct, that is 17.6% of the cap. He's not leaving much, but if you wanted to, you could make that argument. People are up in arms that maybe he should be leaving more on the table. Understand that the PA is on all of these guys. Get as much as you possibly can, because it pulls everyone up, right? A rising tide raises all ships. It's like I can't talk at all today. My great metaphors are just falling out of my face. It's an interesting debate. When Crosby did it, you know, he took a little less and he's won 3 championships. Ovechkin didn't do it and he's won none. Now, those teams are constructed a little differently, could be coincidence, but there is an argument to be made that you can ask for as much as you want and you can probably make it, but understand that it means we can't pay people around you as much, and maybe that leaves you on a team not as good. Taves and Kane, since they signed their big extensions, have won 3 playoff games, not series, games. They were swept this past year, and they lost in 7 in the first round the year before. So things aren't going great in Chicago either. I gotta tell you, I don't mind this number for McDavid, but it's gonna put the Oilers in a wicked mess, and we're gonna touch on that in a second. But what you should understand is these types of salaries aren't crazy. They're not new. If you look back to before the cap came in, right around the turn of the century, and I took a look at some numbers here. Jaromir Jagr was making $11 million. Peter Forsberg is at 10. Paul Kariya had a couple years around 11. Matt Sundin was around 9. Joe Sakic was around 9. All of those making more than Crosby is making now because the salary cap came in and brought it down. And as the cap raises, the salaries go up again a little bit. But your top-end players aren't getting the same percentage of it that most of us would have predicted. And that's driving the league and the Players Association crazy. You want your top guys to keep pushing that top salary higher. And what it does is cannibalize the lower-end guys and the middle guys. They have to take less. But that's not what's happening. When you see guys like Crosby, he's certainly not the only one, who took a little less so that you can build a better team around them, it's the middle-tier guys, your second and third liners, who are making more than they should. And that's where teams get in trouble. When you give a third-line player or a fourth or fifth defenseman, and we're going to get to Chris Russell in Edmonton here in a second, $4 million, that's never what this was meant to do. And I'd use him as an example. Every team's got one. Remember when Toronto signed Jason Blake to like $5 million? No good. No good. And every team's got them. Guys that you just wish you hadn't given that kind of money to, and you just got to wait it out, right? That middle-of-the-pack guy, and a star comes along, a guy who might have fit in your top pair or on your top line, becomes available, but you can't do it because you're stuck paying a 3-4 defenseman or, you know, a second or third line winger too much. The problem isn't that the stars make too much. It's that the middle is making too much. So I don't have a problem with Connor McDavid at 13.25 when you compare him with some of those stars that when the market... Frankly, this is a bigger league now than it was at the turn of the century, and there were lots of guys. Theo Fleury was making that kind of money. Like, God love Theo, but he wasn't Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby. So there were lots of guys making this kind of money, and now we're back there. We're back at that point. Top-end guys are ready to make that kind of money. And the Oilers fans, not all of them, don't go crazy on me here, but there is already criticism that that's too much and it's going to handcuff the Oilers. And it is, but that's not McDavid's fault. It's not his obligation to take less. You'd like him to, but like I said, maybe you can make the argument that he did. When Sidney Crosby signed his second contract, not the third one, which he is on right now, the one that came out of his rookie deal, he took $8.7 million. And you can and should make the comparison here to what Connor is doing. At that time, the cap was $50 million instead of $75 like it is now, and Crosby's deal represented, 17.3% of the cap, which is what McDavid's would be roughly. McDavid's looks like 17.6. So fairly comparable. Here's the problem. Everyone knew back then, after losing a year to the lockout, revenues were way, way down. Okay? And everyone knew the cap was going up. Big TV deals were coming in. Other marketing initiatives were starting to kick in, and the cap was just going up and up and up, sometimes by $3 and $5 million per year. So when they signed that, Crosby only stayed at 17% of the cap for like 1 year, and then it was down to like 15, and then it was down to like 13, and then it was down to 11. And all of a sudden that number becomes less of a big deal because the cap keeps going up. No one is predicting that the cap is going to continue to rise here now. It's leveled off quite a bit. There was serious debate on behalf of the PA this year as to whether or not they should use their cap inflator because it was killing them on escrow. It's leveled off. And there's a chance it may grow by $1 million here and there. But there's nothing big coming. There is no big national TV deal. There are no big initiatives. They've pulled out of the Olympics. So there won't be any significant international growth here for the next little while. The cap's going to be flat. So it looks to me like McDavid's number will sit at around 17.6% of the cap for the foreseeable future. Can you build a team around that? I think you can. I think you can, but you can't make mistakes in other places. Because now they have to sign Draisaitl, and they've already got some deals. And I want to take a look at some numbers here with you just quickly that tell you why the Oilers might already be in trouble. And it's got nothing to do with McDavid. So the Oilers are going to have to sign Draisaitl also this summer. That's going to happen. That's going to come down. Who knows what he's going to want. But he's not going to take similar money to what Lucic is making, right? He's going to want to stay closer to McDavid. He won't make what McDavid's making. But if McDavid gets 13.25, bet your ass Draisaitl ain't settling for less than 9.5. Okay? So as we look at some numbers here, the Oilers, by the end of this summer, will have 8 players making up $52 million in the cap, or 70% of the cap. Okay, 8 guys. That is McDavid, Draisaitl, Lucic, Larson, Russell, Sekera, RNH, and Oscar Klefbom. All of it until 2021. Okay, so that is a huge, huge chunk of your cap that will be locked up within 8 guys. And here's the problem, okay, because it doesn't cover some really big pieces that are coming up. You're going to have Cam Talbot, who is a UFA next year. You're going to have, who else? Ryan Strome, RFA next year. You have Darnell Nurse, RFA next year. And you got Maroon, who will be a UFA in 2 years. So, major pieces. I think RNH is as good as gone. You can't keep all of those guys. He's already making 6. And he's going to need a new deal real soon. But look at that. That's Cam Talbot. What's he going to want? He wants a raise and he deserves one. He was great for them last season. Patrick Maroon, is he going to take less than Milan Lucic? No chance. He's brought in and is now doing the job of Lucic, and he's doing it better. So you have major pieces here and major, major, major amounts. If you have 70% or more, once they get those deals done, tied up in 10 guys, gets to 12 once we figure them all in, you got to fill out more than half your roster on like 25, 30% of the cap. That's why you're in trouble, and that's why I jumped up and down the way I did last year when they brought in Lucic. That's why I said a couple of weeks ago, Chris Russell was a terrible deal. 4x4 for Chris Russell on the face of it, not terrible, but how does it fit with the rest of your stuff? And that's why Eberle was traded, was because they had to start making room for this, and his 6 mil is gone. But Strome's going to want a raise in a year when he becomes RFA. So you're right back in the same position. You have to do the research. You have to look how it all fits together. You can't have Lucic and Russell making over $10 million if you're going to give McDavid and Draisaitl, as you should, a ton of money. It just doesn't work. Those can't be your pieces. Trade Taylor Hall. This is the thing that I don't get. Everyone except me, it seems, and was giving Pete Chiarelli a pat on the back, saying he was doing a great job rebuilding the Oilers. Trade Taylor Hall for a middle pair defenseman? Sure, why not? Give Chris Russell $4 million times 4 years? Yeah, great. He blocks shots. That's a good idea. What are you doing? You knew these deals were going to come down. You knew they were going to be big. And there are some hockey fans out there that are jumping down, up and down, getting mad at Connor McDavid for wanting to get paid his fair value. That's what a star player is worth. Just because some guys aren't taking it doesn't mean that's not what they're worth. The problem is the guys that you've given far more than what they're worth to that have handcuffed you, and now everyone expects Connor McDavid to be the one that bails them out of trouble. That's shit. I was impressed when I saw 13.25. Because we talked the last time we had this conversation, Rob and I, over on Talk and Sports, figuring about $14 million would get it done. But there were people out there saying 11 mil is what Connor should be looking for. Fuck that. You see Jonathan Toews and the numbers that he put up this year, and God love him because he's one of my favorite players. But Connor McDavid lapped him like twice in terms of production and what he was bringing to the team, and you want him to take only $500,000 more than what Jonathan Toews is making? No chance. You can't blame the star. You blame the GM. And if you want, you can blame the bad players further down the lineup, not towing their worth. But blame the GM that put you in that spot. Don't look for Connor McDavid to be the one to dig you out of trouble by taking less. He's got to get his. And so this deal isn't finalized. Maybe it comes out a little higher. Maybe it comes out a little lower. But I was blown away by some of the stuff I was reading online today that was saying the Oilers were crazy to give McDavid that much money. Jaromir Jagr made that much money 20 years ago. And we're just getting back there now. It's a generational talent. You know how you could keep that number down, Edmonton? McDavid's camp asked for a 5-year deal, not an 8-year deal. And it was smart of them. Because maybe in 5 years, the cap's gone up. Maybe it hasn't. No one's going to offer Connor McDavid a pay decrease. So he asks for 5 years. If the cap's gone up, he can look at Edmonton. He can look at the whole league. He's going to be a UFA and say, I'd like to be paid a little more. And the Oilers said, we'd really rather have some certainty for 8 years, which was the right move by them too. And he has to say, okay, then it's going to cost you more. I bet you he would have done $11 million over 5 years, or times 5 years. Because then he's got another big contract out in front of him. If you want to buy those extra UFA years from him, it's going to cost you more. Because he's going to assume he's got to do it like the cap will go up. He's got to protect himself. So both sides of this have done it right in terms of this negotiation. Pete Chiarelli has not done it right when it comes to Chris Russell. You know, when it comes to Adam Larson, quite frankly. I don't know what Klefbom should be making, but he's tied up for a long time. You got, like I said, Cam Talbot's going to want big money. Maroon's going to want bigger money. They're going to feel it in a big way, but it's not McDavid's fault. Look at Toronto now. This was a bad day if you were a member of Leafs Nation or a member of Leafs management. Because I promise you, they were also hoping that McDavid would take a hometown discount so that they could say to Matthews, hey, you're not quite as good as him, and you should also take the discount. You know, where does it leave Matthews? If Connor takes 11, maybe 12, where does it put Matthew? 9 or 10? 9.5? I think they can live with that. But they got multiple deals of their own coming up here. You got Nylander and Marner. It's going to cost you. Nylander goes first. That gets done probably this summer. If you're lucky. If you're the Leafs. If you're the Leafs, you don't want to do a bridge deal. You don't want to give him short term and then have him explode. If you offer him, I don't know, he was a 50-60 point guy last year. Came on strong at the beginning of the season, came on strong at the end of the season, but had some struggles around the middle, and that was partly due to use. They put him down on the fourth line for a while. If you're the Leafs, you would rather give him probably 6 years times $6 million right now. And it sounds like a lot for a kid who's only got a year and a half in the league, and it is. It's a risk. But let's say he goes through next season playing on Matthews' wing again and he ends up at 90 points. Maybe that's too high for you. Maybe you don't think that's reasonable. It is. But what if he ends up at 80 points? What if he ends up in the top 10 in point scoring? And then he gets to come to you and he goes, you know, I'd prefer to make 8 or 8.5 million and my stats now say that's what I'm worth. It hurts you a lot. If you give him a 2 or 3 year deal and he becomes a regular 80, 85 point guy, you're now looking at 8 or 9 million a year. You'd be better off to gamble on that guy's talent right now, and he knows it too, and give him 6 right now for a long time and just hope he's going to be that good. Because that's your only chance of keeping all three of these guys. You want to get this done probably earlier. Nylander might say, I'd like to bet on myself. I'm going to go play this next year. And we'll talk again next summer. Which he's got the right to do. That could be very, very expensive for Toronto. A lot of people are saying you give him a bridge deal and see what he is. No. No, no, no. If you want any chance at all of keeping this core together, you got to gamble a little bit. If you can get him at 6, maybe Marner at 7, that's undervalued. So you're going to have to get damn lucky to get that. But that's what you should be trying for right now. If you could get those guys at 14 between the two of them, and then Matthews at around 10 probably, you're at $24 million between the three of them. Chicago is at $21 million between two guys. Who would you rather be? That's the kind of approach Toronto is going to have to take right now. So they didn't want to see McDavid get this huge number. They would have liked to have seen that be a little lower because Matthews has got to stay under that. And maybe that message of take the hometown discount stays alive. McDavid's kind of shrugged that, which he's got the right to do. He doesn't owe the Oilers anything. It's kind of this romantic thing that fans have in their heads that say, well, our guys, they should really take a little less. Well, you know what? A lot of them do that. Some of them don't have a choice but to do it. Some of it has to do with, you know, the fact that Crosby's at 8.7 right now has just as much to do with him taking a hometown discount as it does that the cap was much lower when he signed it. What do you think he'd be making if he was a free agent this year? Coming off two cups, two MVPs. Oof. He's right up there too, I'm telling you. So it's an interesting spot. And Leaf fans should be watching what's going to happen here with Draisaitl just as much as with McDavid because they're next. Jack Eichel is watching down in Buffalo. If I'm him, I'm going to do the opposite of Nylander because I was hurt last year and I haven't had the same supporting cast and I haven't put up the numbers yet. I'm going to wait and I'm going to put up another 90 points this year and then we'll talk. Like to him, that's got to make the most sense. If he signs now, he's getting locked up low, right? He's lowballing himself due to injury. He's got to play another season. But all these guys are watching. And the Oilers, just on the time frame of it, are going first. But mark my words, if they get into cap trouble, and they're going to, it won't be because McDavid took too much. It's because the lower-end guys have too much. That's why so many people get upset in Toronto about Matt Martin. Lots of people like to go, that's only 2.5 for what it... That guy can't make 2.5. You need that. Maybe he could make a million. You need that 1.5 to go somewhere else. You can't make the little mistakes because when they pile up, that's when you get into trouble. Like I said, it's not the superstars that get overpaid. They're getting underpaid, to be honest with you. It's everyone else on the roster. So it's an interesting time. And like I said, just wanted to get on and talk a little bit about it because there's some heavy misinformation floating around on the internet. There's some people with a crazy-ass perspective that it's the high-end guys who should be willing to make up for their GM's mistakes. It's not how it works. You pay your top guys properly, and you just hope to hell nothing else blows up in your face. So I think some guys are going out of Edmonton. I think Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is as good as gone. I think they don't have a choice with what he's making. I don't like it. I wouldn't want to do it. But they've got some other bad contracts that won't be movable, and maybe he is. Maybe you can get something for him. Interesting times ahead. Like I said, Leafs are on the clock. Keep an eye on it. That is the Unforced Errors podcast. We got some other great stuff on the network right now. Brand new Audio Whiplash and Tall Can Sports coming, both before Canada Day. So there will be some more stuff here on the network for you. But take a look back. We had a great talk on some craft beer and what Canadians should be thinking in terms of this possible buyout of the Canadian newspaper industry. Seems like a pretty bad idea, but you can find that all on Audio Whiplash 76. There's also some great fallout from the expansion draft, the NHL draft, some of the trades that are going on. Lots on the network right now on Tall Can Sports as well. Find all of it at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast application. My name's Matt Robinson, and we will see you on the next one.
Well, this one's empty. For more, visit tallcanaudio.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at Tall Can Audio.